Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Matthew Heimbach. I'm joining you with my observations and thoughts about what's going on in the world. As you know, the fact that I'm talking to you right now proves that I survived the hurricane of Hurricane Sandy last week. Here in Baltimore, we were blessed enough to not be hit directly on by Sandy, which they were predicting beforehand. And as we see, to kind of have a segue into my first topic, the damage that's gone on in New Jersey and New York, especially, I think is very, very interesting and something we should discuss. Because here in Baltimore, I live in Baltimore City, of course, so nothing really changed for me except I got a little bit of flooding in my apartment. There are police helicopters over the city and police running 24/7. So nothing really changed for me, unfortunately, with the flooding, except I'm still living off the remains of canned soup and ramen noodles and stocked up bottled water. But what's going on just, you know, about 100 miles north of me is very, very interesting. And something that we need to look at in terms of what happens when a collapse happens, whether it's going to be economic, environmental, you know, a terror attack, something of those means can really bring things to a standstill. Because we're seeing in New York City that, of course, Mayor Bloomberg, who champions banning any, you know, soft drinks over 16 ounces and talks about gun control and, you know, is the defender of civilization as he sees it, decides that food and resources destined for people that are in need of them should go to a marathon. Now, luckily, public outcry canceled that, but the problem is that the elites, once again, have a constant disconnect from the common people. But what is going on in New York and New Jersey, as of when I'm recording this, you know, and they're talking about possibly having power out for another 5 or 6 days, so by the time you listeners hear it, the problem might even be worse, which is what's terrifying. The idea that here in America, there are people, not just, you know, homeless, but middle-class individuals going through dumpsters to have to try and find food in their neighborhoods, because what has happened? You have a storm that destroys infrastructure. You can't get gasoline, so considering most of our stores only have a 2 or 3 day stockpile of food, that's kind of an issue. If you can't bring enough into the city to feed these people, obviously New York City and urban New Jersey don't have farms everywhere. Maybe a few urban collectives, quote unquote, where they, you know, take down a slum city or part of the city and plant a couple rows of corn and some flowers, but that's not enough to feed a population. So the problem is that we see there's not enough food or resources to maintain even a basic standard of living following a collapse, because what happens, the infrastructure falls apart, that if you can't afford gasoline to move your tractor trailer into a state, you're not going to go there, of course. If the pay isn't increased for the danger of going into a state of emergency, as we see in New Jersey, where Governor Christie is talking about enforcing the anti-price gouging laws, where you can't increase your prices above about 10%. Now, the problem with that is, if I'm a citizen here in Maryland, and I want to load up a truck full of generators and drive up and help, all, regardless of their skin color, or just help the people of New Jersey or New York, something has got to make it worth my while. And the idea that, say, I buy a generator for $100, and I can only charge at maximum $110, that it's not worth my time, that I'm going to actually lose money transporting all of those things from here to New York City. So we see that our current system, which is this bastardization of, you know, we've got the elite capitalism and we've got all these price controls that don't actually help the people. And therein lies the true problem, that our system, you know, whether it's left-wing or right-wing, is not geared towards helping us. It's geared towards enriching certain demographics and certain individuals. So what we're looking at now is we have American citizens who, a week after this disaster, are forced to live out of dumpsters and drinking sewage water in supposedly the greatest country on the face of the planet. So that has nothing on what we've seen for looting, that the mainstream media has not covered this at all, nor would we expect them to. I mean, you know, with the Rodney King riots, I have faith that if the current mainstream media had been in charge, that we never would have found out about it, because it's bad press, especially for a president who may be facing defeat in this upcoming week. Now, if this is aired after the election, then we'll see how it turns out. But the idea that you know, the media purposely is keeping the fact that there are, you know, self-defense groups in various neighborhoods in New York and New Jersey that are using, you know, things as little as baseball bats to try and defend their homes from looters. You know, in Coney Island, you're seeing Rent-A-Center stores, liquor stores, you know, being broken into as National Guard troops patrol the streets and state troopers and local police try and keep hold. And people are so dedicated to jack a $20 bottle of Jack Daniels that they're willing to risk, you know, possibly being detained or even shot by police or National Guard troops so they can steal from honest, you know, Americans who run businesses. You know, they're not stealing from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or, you know, Bank of America. They're stealing from your mom and pop liquor store or bodega down the street who is barely making it by as it is, paying these increased taxes, trying to subsidize, you know, wars for Israel and, you know, the political elites. You're not hurting these rich fat cats. What's happening is these individual citizens are being, you know, essentially victimized by their own communities, which further is going to decrease the idea of having an entrepreneurial spirit, where if you start a business, if something bad happens, the police turn, you know, a blind eye to try and stop other crimes. The idea that you could be looted out of, you know, out of your home, out of the ability to pay the mortgage on your own store by being able to buy new products, that there is nothing left. And therein lies the true issue of America, where, you know, we talk about demographics. We talk about a host of other issues that are changing the idea of what is America. And Samuel Huntington, you know, talks about it very well in his book that he wrote before he passed away. You know, who are we as a country? And as we further fragment more and more, there is really nothing that defines us other than economic interests. So if the quote-unquote United States of America is simply an economic zone for people to come and make money and promote their, you know, well-being for them and their families and potentially their home country, that there's really not anything to stop you from looting the store down the street or, you know, beating to death a clerk because you want to take a pack of cigarettes or candy or, you know, anything else. It's this idea that there is no more community, that America in the present day has no community. I mean, you might have small ones. In Baltimore, you know, we have Greektown, Little Italy, that the various ethnic groups have their small little enclaves. But as a whole, my interest in being, for instance, in Baltimore is based on gaining my education and then also maybe make a little bit of money. But I have no passion for, you know, the guy that lives even two buildings down from me. Maybe my direct neighbors, because I live in an area where many of the same people as me go to the same church. You know, we talk on a fairly regular basis, but even apartment buildings down from me, that's 50 yards. If that, there is no community anymore. And why is that? Well, first of all, that the racial demographics make it very different. I'm not going to walk into an all-black apartment complex, especially in Baltimore, given the amount of, you know, white-on-black crime and simply the brutality that we see. I'm not going to walk in there and knock on a door and hand people a plate of cookies, because I'm more likely to, you know, end up losing my life and at least my wallet than end up making a friend and that sort of thing. And it makes sense. These communities, these ethnic enclaves, have insulated to such a degree it's balkanization. Now, whether we're going to see it on a national trend, well, of course we are. You know, California is a great example. You know, New Mexico, Arizona, we're seeing it there. But even in your own communities, in your own neighborhoods, I'm willing to bet you're associating with people who are like yourself, who, you know, are of the same race, probably go at least to the same, you know, type of religious practice, whether you're Christian or pagan, or, you know, you're not really into anything, but you like to go down to Starbucks and talk to people about the musings of the universe. So there's something that binds you together with at least a few people, but your overall community, you have nothing in common with, except for the fact, 9 to 5, God willing, if in this economy you still have a job, you get to get up and go and make a little bit and try and get ahead to take care of you and your family. But, you know, the feeling of the 1950s, where you talk to especially a lot of older folks about, you know, you used to let your kids run down the street all night, and you call them for dinner, they'd be there because everyone's looking out for everybody else's kids, their families. If your dog gets loose, everyone's going to go out and look for it. That it was a sense of, it's not just a place to live or a place to make some money. it's a community. It's the folk truly expressing the principles of our ancestors, essentially. And that is gone. That is long gone. Where, you know, if someone came and knocked on my door at 2 o'clock in the morning and said they needed help, and they didn't look like me, and they, you know, looked a little bit like they were of a different class, there's no way I'm opening the door. Or I might open it, but, you know, I'd be packing heat to make sure that nothing would happen. It's the idea that there's no trust anymore, and there's a reason for that, because these various ethnic enclaves are simply preying off one another. And the only group that hasn't come together, at the very least for self-defense, is of course whites. And I know that I'm preaching to the choir on that, but as a people, everyone else pulls together to advance the causes of them. You know, the idea of, in the black community, if you have a gangbanger who might shoot, say a white man or even a black man, in the middle of broad daylight, on a public street, there's 100 witnesses. You know, when the police show up, because they're representations of quote-unquote, the man, or white America, they're not going to get a single testimony. The man who was gunned down might not have even done anything, but that's irrelevant to the idea that the community comes together, insulates themselves, and understands their best interests, and will even allow thugs and violence in their community as long as it's their community, and at least the stated enemy is everyone else. You know, it's anyone not in the clique. So I'm interested to see, especially, how with this election, and I guess we'll find out, but in regards to how will these communities react to the election? Because when things are looking like they're tightening up, you know, I have some friends in Pennsylvania who are working on the campaign for Mitt Romney, some others who are working for Gary Johnson, and there's still some hardcore Ron Paul fans out there knocking on doors for some write-ins, but you know, they're talking about in Pennsylvania how the race is tightening, you know, in all the different swing states where Obama, his D plus 8 coalition is slowly falling apart. And that is not an endorsement on my part of Mitt Romney. It's just very interesting to see that people, especially I think white Americans, are flooding to Mitt Romney. Simply, even if they don't like him, for the idea they might be able to have, you know, better jobs or cheaper gasoline or just something to help them be able to take care of their families. So I'm interested to see in terms of the communities viewing themselves as these separate parts about what going to happen when this election takes place, because I think very quickly we might see the idea that certain communities taking care of one another, but overall there is no true American identity or community. It's almost every man for himself. So, you know, it's very interesting, as we see with Valerie Jarrett, who worked with the Obama campaign, and is a, you know, huge political insider, that she said, after we win this election, it's our turn, payback time. Where we're not running in 2012 for an American candidate. We're running for a candidate that is going to best express the interests of our, you know, subsection. You know, it's a confederacy, for lack of a better term. Not to, you know, insult the honorable, you know, Confederate States of America, which my ancestors fought and died for. But it's the idea of it's almost like this pushed together nearly Soviet Union style, where, you know, it's essentially a headcount of ethnicities lining up to say who is going to support this candidate, who's going to push these interests, and once we win, we're going to get payback. The only problem is that whenever whites win, instead of getting payback for the atrocities done upon us, or at least even advocating for our own interests, our leaders betray us every single time. It's something I bring up on a frequent basis, but the idea of when we elected George W. Bush, you know, we had the Congress, we had the House, we had the Senate, we had the Supreme Court, and we had the President. If we wanted to express white interests, if we wanted to shut off the valve of the flood of third world immigration, if we wanted to even do basic reforms that would benefit our people, that was the time. It's never going to get any better. That was the best it was going to be. But here's the problem. The elites and our politicians don't give a damn about our best interests. They don't. They use us every 4 years, or in the House seats every 2 years, and they might make an occasional right-wing comment or, you know, something that might spark our interests, and we rally around them and give them our money, which we don't have enough of as it is to take care of our families, and we believe in them. We bleed on the campaign trail for these people. and when we elect our own politicians, they turn their backs on us every single time. And of course, when the enemy wins, you know, we see with the Obama administration, and I fear for what happens in another 4 years of Barack Obama, although a Romney administration I don't think is preferable at all, but with Obama, we see this idea that the black community understands that, you know, Ms. Jarrett discusses, you know, after we win, it's payback time. We're going to give these whites, we're going to give these conservatives, which, you know, it's basically the same term, we're going to give them back what they deserve. And considering the right wing or the left wing circles that President Obama goes in, where, you know, you're being raised by a communist, where we're not going to have anything left by the time, you know, his next 4 years are done. But of course, that does not mean that we need to endorse Mitt Romney, because the problem with Mitt Romney, if Mitt Romney wins, therein lies the true problem. We think we've won. You know, the whites will go back to sleep. And even Pat Buchanan was talking about how, you know, a Mitt Romney administration might be better for white America, but no, it isn't, because at the very least, Barack Obama lets us know that there is an alien in the White House. There is someone who is not of us, not of our country, who is running our affairs. So hopefully, you know, I will wake up Wednesday morning and Virgil Goode or Merlin Miller has, you know, taken the election and America is saved. But I think we all know that isn't going to happen, that the Republic has been dead for a long time, that we signed it away at Appomattox Courthouse, where in 1954 and 1965, that was just one more nail in the coffin. But by then, the Republic was always buried, that there is no return, because at this point, there is no America for people like us. They can guarantee 95% of the listeners have nothing in common with what is taking over America currently. And we live in such a strange, disgusting environment now where, you know, my own parents can't recognize the America they grew up in. And my grandparents, oh, good Lord, there is nothing. You know, I had ancestors that fought, you know, on both sides of the Second World War. And I've heard many a time, whether it's from my ancestors or, you know, being with them at VFW halls, where there is nothing that the veterans, especially World War II and Korea, even Vietnam, if they'd known this quote-unquote America they were fighting for, they wouldn't have done it, because there is nothing left to fight for. That's why conservatism is such a flawed ideology, because there's nothing left to conserve. We've already lost. That the election is between a puppet of international bankers and political interests and a puppet of international bankers and political interests. There is no sovereignty. There is nothing worth fighting for anymore in this American system. The 50-star flag represents tyranny and oppression over whites and the continued degradation of our very people and civilization. So my hope is white Americans are waking up to this, but unfortunately, going to the polls on Tuesday, I can guarantee the majority of them are going to choose the quote-unquote lesser of two evils, and they're going to get another 4 years of a slow, steady decline of our people. Now we're going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back to continue my thoughts on current American politics and everyday life.
Getting a few people elected will not suffice, in my view, at the present time. What will suffice is a countercurrent and a countercultural revolution which reverses the process of the 1960s. There's a boredom that is settled upon our people. You can sense it. There's a spiritual torpor out there. And the most exciting ideas, the most threatening ideas, the most psychopathological ideas, the ideas which are beyond all other ideas, are the ideas which are in this room. They are the most dangerous ideas, and therefore they have a subtle attraction to radical and dissident minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's so great to be back with you. Now, speaking about the idea of losing America, you know, it's the idea that our moral standards, that our standards for immigration, for jobs, everything has been so perverted from the way it was even 50 years ago. Two generations is astounding. And I want to talk about an interesting story that came up this past week about a man who dresses as a woman, so a transgendered, who is allowed to use a women's locker room, which is also used by young females, you know, elementary school students. He's allowed to use it fully, expose himself, do whatever he wants, because he's a student of Evergreen College. So in order to fight, you know, stave off essentially a lawsuit of discrimination and to be inclusive and progressive, that, as he calls himself, Colleen Francis, gets to use women's restrooms. Because that is the modern day 21st century America in 2012, that we're not fighting to secure our borders or to even protect our ambassadors and Navy SEAL veterans who are fighting to protect, you know, sacred American interests. No. What we're focusing on is giving freaks and those with, you know, not to insult people with mental disorders, but being transgender, this gender identity is a sickness. It truly is a perversion and a sickness. And we're giving these people the ability to go and expose themselves and prance around as they wish in locker rooms with underage girls. You know, this is something where if I had a daughter, I wouldn't want her exposed to a grown man, because of course this Colleen Francis is actually 45 years old. I guess he's returning to education. That the idea that simply because you wake up one day and you decide, well, this is what I feel like. Like, I am sorry, if I wake up one day and decide I feel like a velociraptor, or if I feel like I'm black, or if I feel like I'm an astronaut, that doesn't make it so. You know, I was born the way I was. I was born as a white man. And whether some sickness in my head twists that, I am still, no matter what, a white man. So the idea that we're letting this thing go and expose himself and just continue to show the perversion of American culture is just proof. It's gone, people. That what are you fighting for? You're fighting for liberty and democracy and freedom. So we have the freedom to allow a sick pervert to be in a women's locker room with underage girls. Like that is what the men who stormed ashore at D-Day were machine gunned for. As we gunned down our European brothers wearing Wehrmacht gray, you know, that is what they were fighting for. So perverts and sexual deviants have free reign over locker rooms with your daughters. It's just, it's one more just blatant step to show that there's nothing in this American system worth it. Because you have libertarians who, of course, will come to defense and say, well, no, it's liberty. It's not liberty. That, you know, liberty is this false enlightenment idea. There is a natural order and there are natural laws. And those who decide to break those don't deserve to get a medal and a ticker tape parade. They deserve to be treated as the laws of nature and the laws of God demand. There's rules for a reason. We can't redefine the rules of life every single year, because that's what the leftist media decides to tell us. No, there are absolute truths that dictate the world. And that's what we need to understand. So, I mean, that's something that I think it's very humorous that, you know, here in America, things are so bad. But then if we go to Greece, where, you know, I can sing the praises of Golden Dawn all day, but in Greece, they were showing a play. An illegal immigrant was having a playhouse show, a show, if you dare call it that, in which Jesus was a homosexual and essentially nothing but blatant anti-Christian, disgusting, I don't have the words to say it without going into a tirade of curse words, but this disgusting display. And what happens? The men of Golden Dawn, who were devout Orthodox Christians, you know, of which the church I currently attend is an Orthodox church, that the Orthodox Christians didn't sit down and say, well, it's the liberty of this invader, this foreigner, to come into our homes and pervert the name of Christ. And not only of Christ, just the entirety of Greek culture. Even those who aren't Christians can appreciate the idea that Christianity has contributed to the West, you know, in so many ways, that Charles Martel and his army of Franks repelled the Muslim invaders in 732 at Tours, that it was Christianity that banded together to defeat the Muslims and push them out of our lands time after time after time, as these brown-skinned Bronze Age barbarians tried to occupy us and subjugate our people, rape our women, and destroy our culture. So even those who are, you know, who are pro-white and secular can at least appreciate that Christianity has an important place within our society. And the idea that these foreign hordes can come into our land and defame our culture and insult the most important representation of our Christian identity, you know, is sick. And here in America, we would call that brave. That would get standing ovations in New York or, you know, Chicago. But what happens with Golden Dawn? They, as men, as strong Western men, barge into this playhouse and they make them cancel this. They pull it because the foreigners understand Golden Dawn has no qualms with beating you senseless and putting you in a coma or even killing you because you're here. You shouldn't be here. As Peter Brimlow talked about, you know, after Wade Michael Page discharged his firearm in the Sikh temple and, you know, Sikhs were killed, you know, the first thing he said, I think, is so crucial, that if the Sikhs weren't here, we wouldn't have this problem. If we didn't have these Muslim invaders in Greece insulting our Christian heritage, we would need to deal with it. Here in America, if we hadn't allowed the Frankfurt School and these foreign invaders with their Marxist ideology to come and pervert our education system and our mass media and our culture, we wouldn't have to worry about these problems. If we stood up and prevented this sickness, this cancer, from coming into our land, we wouldn't have to worry about this in the first place. And that's the thing we need to get, that here in America, until we're ready to take the step of Golden Dawn and show force and actually be willing to fight what we believe in, then there is nothing. We have no right to even call ourselves men of the West if we're not willing to stand up, as our brothers over in Europe are doing. You know, nationalists in Moscow were marching the other day. You know, thousands of them, thousands upon thousands in one city. You know, they were standing and they were fighting for Russia. They were fighting for the Orthodox Church. They were fighting for their identity as Europeans. And that is just one city. And of course, the left-wing media is going to portray it as, oh, these are Nazis and blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. These are men of the West and women who are standing up and fighting for something they believe in. And that is something that is so powerful that, you know, even after, you know, the boot heel of communism, that these people are willing to stand, you know, taller and stronger, you know, in Russia, in Eastern Europe. I mean, in Romania, you have Noa Dropta, you have Jobbik in Hungary. You have all these political parties that are actually fighting and acknowledging that, look, these invaders into our homes don't deserve government money. They don't deserve handouts. They don't deserve the right to come in and insult our heroes, insult our culture, and mock them for everybody to see. They deserve a one-way ticket out of our homes at the very best. You know, if they continue this sorts of things, they deserve a boot heel to the back of the neck until they understand who they're messing with. And therein lies the true issue, the weakness of America. We have bought hook, line, and sinker this idea that American Idol is more important than standing up for our principles. You look at, you know, for instance, we have Piss Christ, you know, which is funded by the United States government. This idea that you can take a crucifix and submerge it in some artist's urine, and that's a work of art that deserves money. But in America, that does get accolades in newspapers and radio and television about being edgy. Where, of course, you go to France and you have Catholic fundamentalists who, God bless them, God bless these heroic men and women, trying to use hammers to storm where this disgusting display is being shown and smash it to pieces. And again, whether you're Christian or not, you need to understand the idea that Christian identity has been fundamental to the West, you know, for 1500 years. So those who come and are defaming Christianity and perverting, insulting it, it's not just an attack on the Christians, it's an attack on all of us. The idea that they think they have a right to come in and mock us, as they do, as we see, you know, happens all the time on Israeli media, what they have to say about Christians, mocking the crucifixion, mocking Christians, you know, proselytizing our religion, that the people who hate the West and hate Western interests and whites stand up for themselves, the attack on the Christians is just the first step. That, because that is one of the largest parts of our society, of course they focus themselves upon that, but you know, those of you who are not Christians, or those of you who are Christians and think we can just let this go by, understand the true principle of it's not just attacking one of us, it's attacking all of us. It's our civilization and it's our people. And no, especially not these foreign back invaders, have a right to insult us in our own lands. You know, they shouldn't have a right to say it in their own lands, let alone down the street and being then paid by us to get government subsidies to continue this sickness. So, you know, looking in terms of sickness, I think is very interesting here in America, because we have now former Governor Jeb Bush talking about in Florida the idea that Texas will be blue by 2016. So what do we think about that? The idea that when you think of, I think, the real America, I think of two places, the American West and, of course, Dixie, that, you know, in the American South, going back over 150 years, we fought for our identity, we fought for our God, and we fought for our people. And the American West is essentially made up by a whole mess of settlers from the South after we were burned, you know, almost out of existence, to go and continue the idea that we want to live and maintain our own cultures and customs, and we don't want a federal government to push us around and enforce their values that come from New York City on us. So the American West and the American South, I think, are, you know, are not the same place, but they're brothers at the very least. And the idea that we're losing Texas is disgusting, is so perverted. You know, Jeb Bush says that it's a math question. 4 years from now, Texas is going to be a so-called blue state. Imagine Texas as a blue state. How hard it would be to carry the presidency or gain control of the Senate. Yes. And here's why. You're not having droves. You know, they talk about my generation in terms of the youth being liberal, and of course they are. That coming through the education system, coming through the media, there's a natural inclination to be liberal. One, because it's easy, and you're not going to be mocked or given death threats if you're a liberal, although of course you're given points for being edgy when you denounce the war in Afghanistan, or, you know, you talk about George W. Bush, even though he hasn't been president for 4 years. But the idea of losing these so-called conservative Republican strongholds, it's simply a demographic battle. And I think most people understand that, but there's nothing else changing other than demographics. So those who are conservative, who, if you're listening, welcome, but you know, these middle-of-the-road Tea Party conservatives who think that if we drop enough copies of Atlas Shrugged or, you know, Hayek's various books into the ghetto or to the barrio, that these people are going to go, oh, it makes so much sense. I'm of course going to become a Republican. No, that is such a false and just naive position, that race is the only thing that is changing. And here's the problem, especially, you know, not to talk too much on it, but the Christian perspective, the idea that, you know, Jared Taylor notes it very well in his book, White Identity, that first generation Hispanic immigrants, due to their devotion to Catholicism, are generally very strong on social issues. But the problem is the subsequent generations lose their identity as Americans, even more than their parents did, or their grandparents or great grandparents. They also lose their social conservatism. They're wrapped up, especially Hispanics and blacks, in this, you know, neoliberal Marxist enlightenment sickness and poison, which has gotten us into this mess in the first place. So the idea that we're losing Texas, which is one of the, you know, you think of Texas, you think of white cowboys, you know, going after Santa Ana or, you know, running thousands of cows across the plains, you think of what I believe as the real America. And the idea that we've lost one more bastion of the real America that was always, you know, don't mess with Texas, that this is Texas and this is how we're going to be. You know, to elect a man like Rick Perry, though I am definitely not his biggest fan, but the idea that even he would flirt with the idea of secession and talk about how Texas has its own sovereignty, that it's irrelevant. The Texas sovereignty movement, as much as I applaud them for what they're doing, that it doesn't matter. You could win over in 10 years almost 100% of the whites, but you're not going to have the numbers to be able to secede because it's not your country anymore. As I refer to a state, it's not your country. It's not your home. You're being displaced. It's not just Texas. It's not just Arizona. It's not just New Mexico. It's all of us. That what happens in Texas, you know, what happens on the border, we can't think of that. You know, as the Red Army was moving through Poland, that it would be naive to say, well, they're not going to make it to Berlin because they're going to be, the problem is just in Poland. No. You know, the Confederate Army says, oh, well, you know, they made it to Northern Virginia, but they're not going to make it to Richmond. No, the thing is, when your enemy is so well organized and determined to eradicate you, that it is a simple math question, us versus them. And the thing is, we're going to lose not just Texas, not just the Southwest. State after state is going to fall because, one, we're not having enough children. Therein lies the true problem. By legalizing abortion, you have white women killing millions of our children. You know, millions of men and women who then would go on to have millions and millions more white children. You know, it's the secularization where you get this secular capitalist materialist mindset infected into the minds of white Americans that you don't need anything else. You just need your job and maybe one kid for social status, and you just need to worry about yourself. But it's also by allowing this demographic displacement, even if we start to, you know, return to the natural, you know, white society as I see it, or increase our birth rates, at this point, we have to cede so much territory to even be able to survive that we're looking at a 21st century in which America as we know it, if we wanted to keep that name, is going to go from 50 states to a hell of a lot fewer than that, because there is not enough men to man this territory to stand up for us. And therein lies the true issue. The demographics, if we don't win immigration, nothing else matters. If we don't increase the white birth rate, nothing else matters. And that's something to think on, and we're going to take a quick break, but I will be right back with you in just a few moments.
What will it take for the bulk of people who leave Western universities to have the middle or common denominator view of the people in this room? It will take an earthquake, but it's not that difficult to achieve. Once you get people thinking in a dissentient way, this involves very much raising the game. I personally believe people agree with ideas long before they move towards them. They have an instinctual saying of yes. They say yes to the idea before they're completely worked out all of the formula for themselves. The countercurrents of this world exist to provide the formula for people after they've said yes, after they've put forward their first step upon the route to identity and the politics of identity and the religion of identity.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Glad that you're still with me. And we're talking about American society, but I want to take a quick break and go across to a distant land of seeing what America might turn into one day. That in South Africa right now, that a small city is offering a cell phone for 60 rats that they kill. So I suppose if you get a stick or a bat and you whack a rat over the head, if you collect 60 of these, you get to bring them in and, you know, turn them in for a cell phone. So as odd as that is, and I find it rather humorous, that my real question and statement is not based on whacking rats over the head for a cell phone. The idea is, how far has South Africa fallen in the past 20 years? That I don't think living under the South African government prior to 1994, that you'd even have to think about such widespread rat infestations that you need to be whacking 60 of them over the head to turn them in for a cell phone. That you see demographically and politically that when whites give up, you know, if you want to call it power, if you want to call it influence, when you rely upon the false democratic system, what exactly happens? Your nation turns into anarchy. You know, I would love for our, you know, my listeners, as much as I appreciate you all listening to me, to take a quick break, even just pause the podcast real quick, and go and look at a map for Rhodesia. A modern 2012 map. Look for Rhodesia. And I can wait, because you're going to be looking for a long time. It no longer exists. That you have a nation that was, you know, once called the breadbasket of Africa, where if you tilled the fields and used them efficiently, you could feed over half the continent. Where we're talking about it was having food aid and giving them to warlords to use as economic weapons. No, no, you could have actual trade where one nation could supply the food for untold millions of people. And what happens? When whites are taken out of power, you know, when this land redistribution comes into effect, you can't even feed yourselves. When you allow minorities, you know, I hate to say minorities because it's not true anymore. If you want to look at a global minority, it's whites. We are. But when you give it to non-whites, what do? They, instead of protecting our civilization and increasing it and feeding people and coming up with technology, it falls into disrepair. They realize that you need to have a certain number of whites simply even maintain basic civilization in areas like former Rhodesia or South Africa. But this discrimination is so widespread that it's not the whites are not home. That, you know, South Africa in modern day is not home to the Afrikaners and Boers. That they're living on borrowed time. Is their extermination, you know, culturally, linguistically, and simply just physically, comes closer every single day, because unless we get together, you know, the communists had, of course, in the Spanish Civil War, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade to try and, you know, when Jews and leftists and communists from America went over to fight for the communists in Spain, that was their expeditionary force, the internationals, as they called them. But unless we get together, the Jeff Apes Brigade, to come together and, you know, go to South Africa, fight back to save Pretoria, and the various farmers on, you know, spread throughout South Africa, still trying to feed the country and just simply make a living as they're being murdered by these death squads almost every single day. Pardon me. That unless we do that, there's no future in South Africa for the whites. But also, I think this is important, because undoubtedly liberals listen to this and chuckle and say what horrible, uninformed conservatives or left or right wingers or Nazis, fascists, killed 6 million Jews, whatever names I want to come up for people like myself. I want to ask you a question. Without us, who will feed these nations? Yeah, let's look at Rhodesia. That it goes from being able to feed multiple countries to not even able to feed themselves. Without us, who's going to maintain these civilizations you've become so accustomed to? Now, for my American listeners who are thinking, well, okay, that's unfortunate, but what does that have to do with America? It has everything to do with America. Because here in the United States, South Africa is not some isolated incident. The Congo, Rhodesia, it's not some isolated incident. The Africans who are flooding in to Europe and the Muslims and all the other invaders who are demographically turning that into, you know, Eurabia instead of Europe within the next generation or two, that it's not this isolated incident of it's happening over there, so we don't have to worry about it. It's happening here in your very neighborhoods. That how long is it going to be until Detroit is offering a cell phone for every 60 rats killed? Of course, with the Democratic Party in charge, you'll just get a free cell phone. You might even get 5 or 10 or 20 cell phones. But, you know, gasoline or food or just something, how long is it before our civilization decreases to such a pathetic level where we end up being in a situation where we are South Africa or Rhodesia? We can't feed ourselves because we've decided to give in international corporations control of all family farms. And those, of course, who want to stick it out, will get a lawsuit from Monsanto or some other, you know, international conglomerate to push them off their farms, or eminent domain to say we need to build another railroad. Or actually, we don't build railroads anymore because that's when we had industry and had to move things. But another shopping mall or another, you know, block of stores that don't actually contribute anything to society, but they look pretty and they provide us with 7.75 an hour jobs where, you know, teenagers, old people, and those, of course, who have no work cannot even make enough money to support themselves and live. That's what we need instead of farms to be able to feed good, you know, non-Monsanto, non-GMO crops to our people and provide a healthy and safe environment. No. Instead, we get international corporations and banks who have bought and sold our land, who've said that the best way that they can help us is by having unrestricted immigration into our lands. And of course, what happens? We are going to be the next South Africa, the next Rhodesia. And what's going on in Europe? You know, God bless them for the fact that they have the fortitude now to at least start fighting back. Because in America, you have Mitt Romney who's talking about, well, we need to stop illegal immigration, but we need more legal immigration. No, Mr. Romney, we do not need more legal immigration. I do not need more Somalis and more Mexicans and more Guatemalans and more people from every single crappy country on the planet who are uneducated, you know, uninformed, unchristian, and not white invaders to come into my community and destroy it brick by brick. No, Mr. Romney. No, Republican Party. I do not need more of that, because I see what happens across the globe in every country where whites, you don't even lose the majority, but lose the power. And here in this so-called republic, this so-called democracy, that there no longer is any hope for us if we lose the numbers. And that's not to be depressing, you know, to listeners. Don't worry. I'm not all doom and gloom, because the Europeans have figured it out. Their identity, it's what they're fighting for. You know, every time you have a man from Golden Dawn or a nationalist from Russia or, you know, a German stands up for himself, or, you know, the French, actually, you know, a bunch of youth stormed a mosque they were building and said, not in our neighborhood, not in our homes. We don't need any more of this. Get out of here. You know, it's that assertiveness that can save our people. It's working in Europe. You know, Golden Dawn, I have faith that we're seeing a moment where, give it 5 years, they will run that country. The nationalists in Russia get it. I have such a commanding, important relationship in Russia that Russia will be all right. I find it sickening that as a man of the West, that we might look in 10 years and have to see a Russian or a Ukrainian or a Romanian flag coming to liberate us as we're being, you know, put into camps and genocided by the very invaders we let into our territory. So how do we prevent being the next South Africa? How do we prevent the atrocities being committed against our people across the entire globe? Well, of course, it's fortitude. And I've talked about this before, not to beat a dead horse, but it's something that needs to be repeated all the time. It's be willing to stand up for yourself. You know, now we have another example of where, you know, the liberals and the Marxists have decided that we're just a little bit too dangerous if we have the right to protect ourselves. So we have Mayor Bloomberg with his Mayors Against Guns, ran a new ad campaign about how to secure a new society and to stop Americans from being gunned down, well, we need to just stop the guns. We need to get rid of all the guns. They only hurt people. Well, I would look at the real cause of crime, Mr. Bloomberg, or Democrats, or the Brady campaign. What is causing these crimes? Because as I sit here, I look and see that I have firearms in my room that are legal and registered, and you know, there's ammunition nearby, and I've never shot anybody or gunned anybody down, nor have I any plans to. It's the idea that people commit crime. Weapons are an instrument. When I eat dinner, the fork and knife I use are instruments to help me eat. They are not cutting the food by themselves. A firearm, and I'm sure all my pro-gun listeners understand this, a weapon does not kill someone. A weapon does not hurt someone. A person hurts and kills someone. So, Mayor Bloomberg, we don't have a problem here in America of a gun problem. Of course, we don't have a gun problem at all. We have a people problem. Now, what is the people problem, I ask? Well, if you're listening to what my opinion, as I assume you do, the people problem, again, is demographics. That when you walk down the street and someone robs you, the FBI admits this, that the person most likely to be pointing that pistol in your face and blow your head off for $20 is a black man, is a Hispanic man, is the people who shouldn't be here in the first place, which goes back to my first point, that if we were separated, there wouldn't be a problem. That I don't condone programs like segregation, for instance, and here's why. Before someone thinks I'm going soft, it's the idea of under segregation, you're going to have tension. You're still going to have crime. You're going to have mixing. You're going to have all the things we're trying to prevent only through a geographic boundary for our people, which is supposed to be the United States. That as a Southerner, I love and would defend the Southland till my dying breath, as one day I might have to. But we've done this to ourselves by bringing slaves where we put capitalism and our own wealth and importance over our people and our identity. That sealed the fate of many parts of the South, and same the rest of the country in the West, by letting, you know, Asian immigrants flood in because it was cheaper to build railroads, whether it was up north by allowing anyone and everyone to just come on in because it's cheaper to exploit them for factory labor, to exploit them as shopkeepers, whatever it was to make money, we allowed. We've done this to ourselves. America was supposed to be a white Christian republic, and it's not. So how do we prevent the crime we see? How do we prevent the displacement? How do we prevent the occupation of our elected offices by communists and leftists who want nothing more than to destroy Western civilization? It's geographic boundaries. It's by having a land and staying put, as the Spartans did at the Hot Gates, saying we will not budge from this land, that we need a place in these United 50 states to hold our ground. And we can do it. We've done it before. You know, you look at America, we're not a nation of immigrants. We're a nation of settlers. We're a nation of conquerors. We're a nation of people decided to go with their families into the wild unknown and make something where we can do it. We made a country once and we lost it for our own greed and ignorance. We will not repeat the mistakes of our ancestors, and we will fight for the principles that they believed in. And we can create our own nation. We can create a safe homeland for our people. All it takes is a little bit of fortitude. You know, if the Greeks and the Russians and the Bulgarians and the Romanians and the Hungarians and all these European countries can start realizing that their homes need to be defended, we can do it too. We can defend our homes against invasion, against the spread and the sickness that the communists bring us. But it needs taking a stand, that we as a disarmed and fangless people who believe in this two-party system that further degrades our nation and our people and our culture on a daily basis. We need to realize, we need to reject that. How can you do that? As I wrap up tonight. First of all, politics. Run a third-party candidate. If you don't believe in democracy, don't run at all. Deprive the beast of your support and consent. But if you believe in a republic, support candidates that do. Run third-party candidates. Run pro-white candidates who understand. Second, maintain your own communities. Look for lands where people are like-minded, understand, and are willing to stand and fight for us. Because as I sit here in Baltimore and look out over parts of the city, this is not something I feel like fighting and dying for, ladies and gentlemen. Baltimore is long gone, and when things fall apart, I will not be here. I will be fine trying to find a community. And there's a few on, you know, in my brain about where I'll be going. So look, whether moving or finding a job, or at least know when things fall apart, of a community, a real community, that America used to be. Find that real community, stand by it, and be willing to fight for it. Because the days of white flight should be over. Do not give any more ground or any more territory to those who wish to displace us and drive us from the face of the earth. It's your turn to find your piece of ground, as our ancestors did. Be a settler. Be an explorer. Be a warrior. You know, don't be this defenseless sheep. Be willing to stand for what we believe in. Because if you don't, how will you look at your children? Because I tell you what, I won't be able to. I won't be able to explain to them why they live in subjugation when we had a chance to do something. I talked about this in my last show, and it's something that I truly believe. Tomorrow is always too late. It's our turn to go out there right now and do something. You have the knowledge, you have the ability, you have the power to do it. So ladies and gentlemen, as I close tonight, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for standing strong. And I want to encourage you once again, tomorrow is a new day. Stand up for us and our people and never, ever back down.